Since the founding of America and a pretty solid chunk
Yes.
of its history, the whole point was to prevent a Medici-type family coming forward.
Men don't talk, men don't talk. Men don't talk, men don't talk.
Hello, my name is Wesley Beckner, B as in boy. I made this podcast because I'm really bad at staying in touch with my friends. I think it's a guy thing, hence the name. Each week, I interview one of my friends and talk about life. Initially, I ranted on and on about our kleptocratic government, but I realized week to week that doesn't scale well because you, sweet listener, just hear me ranting about the same stuff over and over again. So now it's back to mostly just stuff about life, but sometimes I do get on my soapbox when I can't help it. This week, I talked to my good friend Wesley Tatum. Our recent text ratio of my bubbles to his bubbles is 2 to 1, which is actually a lot better than I thought it'd be. He never texts me back. We met in grad school in our software design for engineers class. He saw me from across the room and decided to ask me if I'd be his gym partner. He was a collegiate all-star competing in the 100 meter butterfly in the NCAA. And together, we broke the 1000 club in squat, bench press, and deadlift, and continued to be great friends afterward. Enjoy. What a funny premise. The only way for me to keep in touch with my guy friends is if I make a podcast. So I've got these three things. It's like, I want to get in touch with my guy friends, talk about life, personal life. And then I also want to talk about a little bit about career stuff and then global, like more policy. Okay, so I'll let you know. Heather and I are trying to have kids. I thought it'd be way easier.
All these high schoolers are doing it. Why can't we?
I know. I spent most of my life trying to not get into a situation like this. And now it's like you want to go the other direction. It's so much harder. I'm 34. She's 33. We got off birth control in October. It's now June. But she was on, she had the T-bone thing.
Oh, yeah, an IUD.
IUD. And so I think it takes like a take some time for her hormones to get equilibrated.
Exactly.
But now she is monitoring like her cycles. We're making sure we step up to bat on the days that it counts, especially, you know, eating healthy, exercise, low stress, my Aura ring. Do you know Aura?
I have friends that have one. I know the basic premise, but I don't know their like exact terminology or like banding.
Dude, Heather is so funny. We're like competitive with each other. And when we first got these, like the Aura ring is my wedding band, by the way. So that's what I use as my wedding band. And so
in sickness and in health, and we're gonna track that shit.
We're gonna track that shit. But yeah, so we're really healthy right now. We're trying to have kids. Are you guys planning on having kids? You and Beth have been married for a long time, and you met in like high school.
We met like the third day of college, so we were just young babes of 18.
Third day. Okay, very close. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we've been married for 10 years, so together 14, married for 10, and I mean, for the whole time we've been married, it's been we come from big families. We like families,
right?
Not opposed to starting a family, but man, right now it's just not the time, you know, grad school and then starting this job. And I don't know. It's for her, the answer has changed more towards, I'm okay without them, but if you want them, let's have them. And for me, you know, if I have kids, I would want to be a really active participant, especially if it's like hey, we're doing this because I want them.
Yeah, and right.
It would behoove me to not just like, but force Beth to be a primary caretaker, because my job it takes up so much time and energy. So we recently said, you know what, we're not gonna have kids, open to adopting if we ever get to that point, but it just doesn't seem like I'm gonna be in a job where I can participate as a parent the way that I want to. And you know, the last thing in the world I want to do is force this lifelong decision onto Bethany and then lose her because I don't hold up my end of the bargain inevitably.
Got it. Okay. So a couple follow-up questions is like, has it crossed your mind? Like it's, do you feel, so something that comes to my mind is like, well, the job is, could always be there, but the window to have kid is not. Do you think you might regret missing that window? Especially like you watch these movies, like these Tom Hanks and these like Harrison, I'm just making up names with these old people movies where they're like all old, it's the end of their life. Like they always say the career didn't really, you know, matter as much as family. Do you feel that throughout that like pull between those two?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. That was the big, it was me that finally agreed with Beth, rather than, you know, us kind of coming to that together. It was, you know, the ball was in my court to decide, did I want to say, yeah, let's have kids or not? And that's totally at the back of my mind. I love my parents. My parents were amazing parents. And I had such a good experience, and I always wanted to have that kind of, you know, like raise that kind of family that my parents showed. But I mean,
yeah, you're one of my friends.
I love work.
You love work, yeah.
But it's not everything. It's, yeah. I'm just an American man, slave to my work.
Yeah,
no. But it's what I really like about it is enabling a life for Beth and I that we, you know, like we have so many fun hobbies and friends, and we're finally to a point where we get to travel. Like we're taking our first trip together outside of the country ever in a month or so. And so it's like, it finally feels like we're starting to get to a point where we can enjoy life rather than grinding away to set ourselves up. And man,
okay,
kids would change all of that.
Yeah. You're taking your first out of country trip together next month?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah. Like the only times I've been out of country have been for, cause I'm not counting Canada, uh-huh. cause those were road trips.
Sure.
Were for sure. Grad school. I guess once in high school for an immersion trip in Ecuador, but like I've never been to Europe. Beth got to go because her grandma took her in high school.
Man, this kind of leeches into the global conversation, but it's just crazy to me. You have a STEM PhD. Beth has a master's degree, right?
Yep. Yeah. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Yeah. So highly skilled professionals. And you guys, you're 32, 33 and
33. Yeah. Beth is 32.
Yeah. And you're talking about just being able to finally set yourself up. First trip out of the country. What a thing, man. This is like the world we live in right now. It can't afford anything.
It's crazy. Like we were able to buy a home after, you know, me working a pharmaceutical job for 2 or 3 years. We still have student loans that we're paying off. You know, the mortgage, of course. That's really the only debt we have. Finally, we own both the cars outright, and we don't take on credit card debt. But, I mean, it is just expensive.
Well, Heather and I have been going on a disillusionment journey of America. And it started around the time you guys came. We read a book called The Jakarta Method. Have you heard of this?
I have not heard of the book, no.
It's okay. It's not that old. It was written in 2020. And it basically walks you through the CIA operations post-World War II. I mean, it was basically what they did. It was the focus on fighting communism abroad. And Jakarta is the capital of Indonesia. And Indonesia was sort of one of the largest theaters for this. And it just talks about all of the havoc that the CIA wrecked around the world. And so we read that book, and it really got us on this path of realizing. Part of this is I felt like I have been so propagandized growing up. And anyway, so this was like, realizing most of the world doesn't see us as the good guys. I mean, you went to Guatemala to do the solar stuff while we were in grad school, right? And mm-hmm. and so some of what I've learned that I didn't realize before is how active the CIA was there. You might know more than I do, actually. But just that we had participated in overthrowing their government and supporting militant groups that participated in genocides. This kind of playbook was done in a lot of different places. Another critical piece of my disillusionment was watching the last season of South Park. I was very apolitical, and then they made this note on Jeffrey Epstein, and I looked into Epstein, and it got me looking into Charlie Kirk, it got me looking into other stuff. And so now I'm like, oh my God, this is just a total fiasco. And you and I haven't really talked about that at all. So I'm coming in like totally blank onto what your worldviews are, although I don't know. Like, I think I can imagine, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know me well enough, you can probably at least, you know, put me in the right ballpark.
Yeah.
I feel like we've talked about this, but Beth and I, our group of friends, like, the dream is 10 acres and a sauna.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, each couple gets, you know, kind of like a mini that builds their own little mini-ish house. There's a big house in the middle with a communal garden.
Yeah, dude. That's our dream.
The millennial
too.
Dream.
Yeah. Well, yeah, dude, I have so many things to shoot off on that. One thing I'll say is like, we did our little wedding ceremony in Maui in December, and then immediately shot off to New Zealand for our honeymoon. And we rented an RV for the trip. It was 2 weeks, and we were in an RV the whole time, and we would just park at holiday parks overnight. And that was the vibe. It was so nice. You just like, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like each of your friends has your own little unit, little tiny home, little RV, whatever it is, beautiful place to park it. And then you've got a central space where you can like cook and hang out and do the communal things. We're really into this idea. And we even had a like initial meeting, because our friends Connor and Vicky are, Connor, who I mentioned, his partner's name is Vicky, they're on board. And so we like had our first constitution meeting a couple weeks ago, just outlining what we wanted to put in and basic format, and then our must-haves for the land. And so we're looking for anything within 90 minutes of Austin, and a minimum of 15 acres. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's so much about like, right, you know, as it builds equity, is it all equally distributed, or is it according to what you've paid into it? And what if somebody wants to, you know, move somewhere and they want to sell their part of the land? Do they have to sell it back to you guys, or can they parcel it off and sell it?
Exactly. We want to think through this, and like this kind of dovetails into the global question, like topic with you. I want to hear more from you before I tell you what I think. But part of the commune hypothesis, like pilot, is building an alternative system that could be replicated that is not so capitalist. And so we need to do more research in the basic structure, but it'd probably be a kind of trust, and then the trust, and then there's some sub entity underneath it that handles our different partitions. I want to come up with a model where we can grow this, get people involved. Everyone's an owner. I don't know if you can sell your part out. I think the whole thing like has to belong to the trust. But eventually I would want me and Heather to be able to exit so we can start the next one somewhere else. Like I want to try to help create a movement that's an alternative to capitalism. That would be my dream. I don't, you know, but like for now it's like we just want to hang out with our friends and not be in the city.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple things there, right? Like, it's not necessarily an alternative to capitalism as it is like building a buffer within it. You know, like you're still interfacing with public utilities, still have to pay for internet and phone. You'll have to buy some groceries, definitely. But there's much more of a support system. Like if you're all sharing, doing a garden and canning and, you know, stockpiling produce as much as possible, right? And then you're a little more self-reliant within this system that is inescapable as long as you're living in America. But I think the other thing that this is part of why it's become such a like fascination within our age group is it is a new way of forming a community, as all of the traditional ways of forming a community are dying out.
Mm-hmm.
Like in our parents' generation, right? It's, there's kind of two main ways of making community, and they're both kind of the same. You're born in a town and you never leave it.
Yeah.
Or, oh, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, my sounded like I cut out again. You're born in the town and you never leave it.
Yeah.
Or you move to a new town and you find a church and plug into that community.
Right.
And right. Nobody's staying in the same town they were born in, or a shrinking percentage of people are. And then a lot fewer people are going to church, even if they're Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be new ways of finding community. And that's why I think things like, you know, that all of the hobbies now are new ways of finding community, climbing, mountain biking. There's groups that climb or bike together. And all right. of that is just trying to find a system to replace what, you know, these community structures.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is keystone as community. I think that's what we're missing. I think anything that is going to help make our current situation better is going to involve, like, community is the critical piece. I want to figure out how to live ethically. And I don't have a lot of hope for being able to elect the right person who is not tarnished to make changes in Washington. I don't really think that is a possibility. Now, I would happily be proven wrong. I think for it to become a possibility, people need to be able to have food and energy sovereignty so they don't feel like they have to play into the system. I mean, I like had dinner with, you know, so Heather works at Amazon. She works in ads. She closed multi-billion dollar deals. That's what she does. And we sat down with one of her former clients for dinner who works for a large advertising agency, and he was visiting an office for one of the PE companies that they've done work for. And he's like, yeah, like these people are definitely miserable. Like they are definitely the most miserable people I've ever had to work with. And then he's talking about the products that he helps create advertising programs for. And he's like, yeah, I wouldn't give my kids this stuff. Like I wouldn't use this stuff in my house, but like, this is my job. And so the point I'm making is like, we all cut corners. We all make exceptions to play into this really shitty system that doesn't really make us happy because there's no alternative. I really do think we need an alternative to be realistic about creating an opening. Yeah, and I think to make the outer shell start to have the possibility of being ethical, we need to be less reliant on how it currently is and what it gives us.
I think I agree with, you know, kind of that core, the goal is to live in a community and help communities become more ethical and sustainable, I think is another key piece of that. But I think there is a way. It's not an immediate thing for America to go more towards that. I think one of the first things is making public utilities actually public utilities,
mm-hmm.
and not just private companies that are driven by profit margins. You know, if it's a utility, it's like UPS versus USPS, right? Like when it is not seen as something that you derive profit from, everybody benefits. Like UPS doesn't really deliver to super rural communities because it's not cost effective. Same thing with internet and energy and, you know, electricity and water. Like it's not cost effective to reach rural communities, but everybody needs mail and water. And, you know, I think there is something to be said for having ways of not needing to be reliant on those systems. But I also think that a lot of people, there's just no way, like New York City, Seattle, Portland, like even the small cities, even Bend, like how would something, even 50,000 people, how would they live without having a communal system? So I think it more needs to be like actually regulated instead of just driven by profits with toothless regulatory oversight.
We are supported by Shredly. Wife saying you look a little soft around the edges? Well, get hard with Shredly. It's a complete workout app with multi-week programming for strength training, running, and yoga. And there's AI inside. Get shredded with Shredly. Visit shredly.me to get started for free.
Okay, so I want to talk about data centers, since this, and we'll call that the career circle. And then let's get into the big stuff, because I agree with you. You've got a lot rosier of a picture the point of view than I do. So I have
plenty of anxiety, but I think a default optimist.
Yeah. Okay. Are you using a quote unquote AI? And you and I studied machine learning in grad school. We know AI is a business buzzword. I wonder if you're using these large language models at all, or if you're doing just traditional modeling. I also know you're managing, but you were also doing some IC work, but it might have been wet lab. So I don't know if you were actually like writing code. And then, so you and a personal, like not personal, but like in your day-to-day profession, and then your company, like you just described that for me. I know you like,
yeah,
you know, prepare molecules for delivery in the body. And then let's talk about data centers and
So we as a company are encouraging the use of AI and large language models. There is definitely a lot of concern around IP, since, you know, so we don't synthesize the molecules or come up with them.
Right.
They are owned by other companies. So there's a lot of sensitivity around, you know, we can't just like type into ChatGPT, like, how would I formulate a molecule that's like, that has this structure or whatever, like that would be a huge no-no.
Yeah.
So I think, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think that we have instances that we host locally.
Okay.
I don't personally use them. The most use I've seen out of them is literature review and like consolidating papers. If I have a question about like, hey, how well do, the most recent example, how well do positively charged small molecules get absorbed through the intestinal wall?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even think to use AI. And one of my bosses sent me just like copy and pasted the response from the AI prompt that she typed in. And it was really good. So nice. I see uses for it. I think it is a good tool, but more commonly what I see is people trying to learn something. Like I've tried to teach, this is, you know, this was only one or two people, but like I was teaching them coding, and then they didn't, everything, like they would just have ChatGPT generate the code to do the thing that we set out as a goal for them to do. And then it inevitably didn't work because there's some formatting issue or typo or, you know, some wrong keyword argument. And because they didn't write it and have to sift through the documentation, they didn't know how to debug it.
Yeah.
So it's a useful tool if you already have the expertise, but it is a self-hindering tool if you're trying to learn something.
Yeah.
That's kind of my general view on it. I've used it maybe twice, once for something more like just generating a funny thing. And then the other thing was like for generating a LinkedIn post, because I have a lot of anxiety about existing on social media. So I wanted help figuring out wording.
Dude, that's funny. I love getting a sample of like how people are using it and what they're using it for. I use it all the time. All the time. But I agree with what you're saying. If I were to just parrot it back, it's like, if you know what good looks like and you know how you would do it yourself, you can use it to take that role over and you can audit it quickly. And perhaps it's a prompt plus some like evals and maybe some like deterministic checks, so that, you know, just again, taking the example of code, you know that it's doing the thing you asked it to do. once you get that formula down, now you can do it a lot of times on different subjects or whatever. So it can be useful that way. But if you are asking it to produce something for you via code and you have no idea how you would do it yourself and you don't know what good looks like and you don't have the right evals in place, it quickly spins out of control. Is that kind of accurate to right. what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like if you don't know how to fact check it, you're not going to learn how to fact check it by using it.
How are we feeling about data centers? What do you know about them?
Man, I know that they are huge. They are expensive while not producing many jobs. They take up water, although, you know, the exact amount of water that they take up, I think that's probably a subject of debate. But they're also pretty much exclusively showing up in drought-ridden areas.
Yeah.
So I got to say, like, I don't think AI is intrinsically bad. I think it has so much potential to be good, but the way that the companies that are popularizing it are going about it is not good. Like, just relying on a gigundous network that reads in absolutely everything, and you have to host all of that and churn through all of that. Like, that just seems like not the most efficient way to do it. I mean, like, that's not even how our brains work, right? Like, we have specialized centers, and then you have things that specialize in connecting those centers, and then things that help specialize in selecting which of those outputs to select. And maybe that is how modern LLMs are structured. That's not really how they're talking about it. I'm assuming it's just one massive, massive network. But I think that there's way better ways of going about doing the things they're doing. Even like water aside, just energy usage.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's so much waste heat that could be converted using thermoelectrics.
Yeah.
You have these massive rooftops that could have solar farms. Like these things could be revitalizing energy infrastructures rather than taking a toll on them and then greasing palms of local officials to not have to pay energy and raising the prices on local communities, which I know is not what's happening everywhere, but it has happened a couple times. So I'm assuming it's happening more than I've heard about.
On the topic of regulation, this aside, but I had recently heard an interview from a former IRS agent who, so this is going to be an anecdote, who had said when they were working for the IRS, they were told to purposefully avoid, just not even bother auditing the really wealthy companies, because even if they did find something wrong, it was going to be so expensive to fight their lawyers that it wasn't going to be
as well
worth it. So they go for the mid-range business. So on the top of the FDA and regulations and what Elon is doing about just like not even just going in and breaking the law, this is again where my impulse is to push on your optimism, because I feel like I just have not seen evidence of regulatory bodies or elected officials operating the way we expect them to. And just,
so here's my thoughts, and sorry to cut you off, but
no, go ahead.
So the whole there. Since the founding of America and a pretty solid yes. chunk of its history, the whole point was to prevent a Medici-type family coming forward where, you know, the Medicis were merchants and traders that just gained such massive wealth and therefore also power that they were able to become their own government, essentially. Not a history person, so sorry if that is not 100% accurate, but I do know the gist is they got really rich. They no longer felt constrained by the government, and in practice, they weren't. Right. And that is exactly what's happening with Elon, with Jeff Bezos, with Mark Zuckerberg, right? We have all of a sudden this unprecedented accumulation of wealth. And the way that we have historically dealt with that is a massive tax on the rich. Like the top tax brackets, tax rate under Eisenhower, a Republican, was well above 50%.
Yeah.
Like, and that was not, because, oh, they've made, you know, like, oh, the government needs a slice of that. It was a specific strategy to prevent people from gaining enough money and power to flout the law and to make sure that people couldn't consolidate wealth and suck the working class dry. And we've weakened unions and we've glorified ultra rich people, and everybody feels like they can be a millionaire. So nobody wants that higher tax bracket, the highest tax brackets to be taxed. They're creating jobs. But I mean, all that wealth is being used to do is consolidate stocks and holdings, buy up more land, set up more shell companies, cycle it through. And I mean, then Citizens United. Now all that money has a way to directly become power, as opposed to just bribes.
Yeah. Okay. I want us to start transitioning. I think like the first, so I'm listening to a podcast that I found out about last week, and I think you would love it. It's I'm gonna pull this up real quick. It's called Master Plan. And it starts with Nixon, and it is going to go all the way to like current times. But right now it's talking about, are you familiar with, I think his name's Lewis Powell. He was a Supreme Court justice. He was appointed in like, I think the 70s. Lewis
I would
Powell.
have no way of knowing.
Okay,
I'm gonna
well,
just trust that that's his name.
yeah, well, he wrote like a manifesto that got circulated, and it was basically like talking about spreading capitalism, right? It was like he was around during the communist craze and
Cold War.
Cold War, and so anyway, it's like this manifesto, and like the podcast is just taking us through the decades. And right now it's talking about George Bush's presidency, junior, old junior, and the MacGyvering that went on to get the conservative judges in place in the Supreme Court during his term and leading up to his term. I'm
Oh,
just
that sounds
using,
familiar.
yeah, well, I'm just using it as a point that I think the reason things aren't working is that there are just very powerful people who have decided the playbook is total control, and like I don't like it's I get what you're saying. It's like let's point at it's like these things just need to be enforced. It's fixable. Come on, guys. I don't think we have as much control over it as we're made to think. So here, let me lead into this is my closing scene. You know, we've been talking for an hour. So look, dude, what really got me into being, because I didn't, so I was interested in like politics when I was in college, and then I got into STEM, and it was like my life got busy. I didn't really care anymore. And I read like an hour of AI news a day, but I didn't read like anything to do with politics. I didn't care. And then I watched the latest season of South Park, and it had the final scene. Did you watch it, by the way? I don't know if you watched South Park. I think you watched South Park.
Nah, I've seen it, but I don't watch it.
Do you know who Jeffrey Epstein is?
Oh, yes.
So I
I
didn't know
have
who
been
I,
familiar with him before this season of South Park.
and so the final episode, they like basically the story arc of the season is Satan is pregnant with Trump's baby, and he's gonna deliver this baby, and everybody's leading up to it. It's gonna be on Christmas. We're all excited, and it's like, oh no, the baby killed itself. And then they do like the, you know, whatever it's called, where you look in the mother's womb on Satan, and the baby's actually Jeffrey Epstein. He hung himself, and it shows him hanging himself. Oh, they're basically saying like that there's a cover up. So the security feed is cut, and then they show him hanging, and there's people going in and out of his room, and all the guards were like, are like not at the right place, and they lied about where they were. Like it was obviously orchestrated. But I saw that, got me digging. I was like, okay, connection to Mossad, Israel. Human trafficking, a lot of Clintons, all this, like all these people are connected. No one's being persecuted. And that took me to Charlie Kirk. I didn't know who Charlie Kirk was. Watched all the different people talking about his assassination. Again, really fishy circumstance. Doesn't make any sense. A lot of things point to Mossad. He was saying a lot of bad things about Israel after he had been funded by them, so he wasn't playing ball. And of course, that took me all the way back to 9/11. And I revisited 9/11, and that also super fishy. So I am basically operating from a standpoint where I think that we are very susceptible to false flags as a population. We don't want to believe that the worst possible reality could be at play, and we're willing to take anything thrown at us that offers us an alternative narrative. That is the operating premise I got to after digging into all this stuff. What do you think about Jeffrey Epstein? Do you think that he hung himself?
I don't think so. I don't think that was a suicide.
Okay.
Operating on, you know, I kind of followed it as it was happening, you know, when all the news is coming out and stuff. I haven't done any retrospective digging, but you said it, the security camera, the fact that he is, you know, the central person and has all of this information on a network of elite and powerful people, and he ends up dead like that. That's suspicious.
I think this is the plight of humanity, is it's always class warfare. We get distracted on purpose by the people who have power to involve ourselves in cultural warfare, but that's never real.
I would agree. I mean, it's divide and conquer.
That's a
classic playbook. Divide and conquer, and then look, we're being attacked. Support me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what we're being attacked by is real. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
I don't think we're being attacked from the inside by trans people. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. I've been I have no idea what's going on with trans people. The last thing I heard was about J.K. Rowling not supporting trans people in the Olympics or something, or whatever it was.
A lot of friends in the LGBTQ community, and so they educate me. I try to stay educated so that I can be aware of how this is affecting them. That is also a hot button. Plus, I mean, Beth works with a lot of people in the LGBTQ community as a therapist. So that is an issue that's close to us, to our hearts.
My gross understanding is just that it's gotten, as one would expect with Trump's presidency, because he is a, like it or not, the president is a role model. It's become a lot more antagonistic for people in LGBTQ queer. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a divide and conquer.
Right.
I mean, this is all another factor into why Beth and I weren't like, yeah, let's have kids. Because they're just like, is this the environment and the world that I want to bring life into? And like, man, if shit really hits the fan, which, you know, it feels like we're careening towards more and more every day. Not careening, being intentionally steered towards.
Yeah.
How are we going to survive, much less,
right?
Much less a child, and then global warming. Even if we solve this whole Trump and Epstein and everything, absolute shitstorm, like we're left with a really scarred and broken Earth that needs to be fixed, because it's just systems built by people who thought the Earth was an unending resource, and then when they realized it wasn't, they operated like it's a zero-sum game, and I'm going to get mine before it all runs out.
Yeah, I mean, all these millionaires are building bunkers themselves.
Yeah. Like, I remember even in high school, like, just high school biology, like, we had a substitute teacher that was, you know, teaching us about the myth of global warming. And like, he was teaching it to us like it was something that was ridiculous. And I remember even then being like, no, this makes a lot of sense of, you know, we have artificially extended the amount of life we're able to support and the means by which we can do that. You know, maybe we can have 10 billion people on Earth sustainably, but it's not the way we're doing it. And like, then in college, you know, I found out that Exxon knew about global warming in the 80s and they suppressed it. So it's like,
I think that we need a different playbook, man. And I don't think one of my favorite quotes that I heard is, you eventually wisen up and either become a communist or a liar. And I think that that's, I think that that's really true. There's some, and what people misunderstand about communism is like Lenin, you know, I just read the book called Lenin, and it's all about him and his life and then what he did. And like, I think people misconstrue what true socialism is, because a lot of what has happened in the past wasn't, you know, it was a dictatorship that tried to operate under the premise of creating equality, but it actually didn't do that. So
it used fascism to impose one party rule and then promptly abused it.
And so again, and that's why I think the name of the game is we need to figure out how to not to have no kings. I think no kings is a mantra I believe in. Is like, how do you create systems that keep us away from that?
For me, I want a system. If I look at, let's take, I think, a different example, but to make a similar, to make the same point of libertarianism, that is such a beautiful system. You know, everybody governs themselves and you don't need a ton of regulation, but I think it's horribly idealistic. I think when there is a system like that, where everybody is intended to take care of themselves and look out for each other, and you know, in the case of communism, you know, we're all taking care of each other and everybody gets what they need, it's just it makes it that much easier for somebody to take advantage of the system.
I mean, I want
a system that is absolutely mistrusting of people and assumes that businesses are going to make the worst decisions because they're the cheapest, and assumes that people are going to, you know, screw over each other because, you know, people, a lot of people are inherently selfish. I don't know if people, you know, capital P people are inherently selfish. And so we just need a system that is able to mitigate that at least and prosecute it at worst.
I mean, I am hopeful, man. I think that enough of us are getting, you know, getting a little bit wiser and
paying attention.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of good reason to be pessimistic and angry. So I personally have to balance it by finding people that make me feel like there's hope.
Yeah.
And it can't just be Bernie Sanders forever, man. Let them
retire. Oh my God. I love him
so much, but
I was just saying, we were watching, so I have people come over on Fridays to co-work, and we just had some like lo-fi hip hop on in the background, as one will, but it was on YouTube. And so a freaking Trump ad came on, and Bernie Sanders was on the Trump ad. He was smearing him for something. I was like, I haven't even heard from Bernie. I wonder what Bernie's doing right now. Obviously he's pissing Trump off. Good.
He's sticking it to people in power that are abusing their power. And let me tell you what.
He's Vermont, right? That was where he came from.
Yep.
Vermont. What a lovely place. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. No, I love him. I wish there were more people like him. I think our generation of politicians is starting to produce people that he can pass the torch to.
Yeah. Awesome, so, man.
That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah. I'm gonna look more into Mondani, and I like it. I like that. Yeah, and Bernie for that matter. I haven't paid attention to him in a minute. Tell Beth I said hello. Thanks for doing this, man.
Absolutely. Say hey to Heather for me.
Will do. All right. Talk to you later, buddy.
Later.